The 2020 MLB season will be one like any other that we have seen before. A 60-game sprint in just over 2 months to decide who will be playing in October in a format that lends itself to the unpredictable. But that's where Greg Peterson comes in. He's got you covered daily, highlighting elements and angles that will be essential to know, along with his picks with every single game on every single day. Now it is time for the Baseball Betting Podcast with Greg Peterson.
Hey, warm hello. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Podcast. Myself, Greg Peterson. We've got a tremendous podcast for you. Scott Seidenberg, you've heard him on NBC Sports Radio, ESPN Radio. He does some work for ESPN Radio out there in the state of New York. Tons of podcasting when it comes to college football and the NFL, so much more. He's going to be joining me in the second segment. We're going to be looking at these strange Sunday games, just handicapping the final day of the regular season in general, and so much more. So we're going to have a quality chat there in the final segment. I do give you guys a sign total on every game on the Sunday MLB betting board. It's something I like to call touch them all. Do keep in mind that there's a lot of to-be-determined pitching matchups, and I'm sure that there's going to be a whole lot of moving and shaking with these, so do want to throw out there that disclaimer. And I always want to reiterate the fact that I love getting your questions on this podcast. If there is something that you like to answer, fire that into my Twitter timeline, at JRSquirty1. If you send these in via DM, aka direct message, well, letters DM to me mean does not matter. But with that said, it certainly does matter the fact that we wound up getting a bunch of great baseball games on Saturday. I did not get in any Twitter questions, so let's take a look back at everything that we saw from the Ball Diamond on Saturday, try to find some trends, and get a little bit more clarity when it comes to the playoff picture.
What happened yesterday? Let's go around the bases and find out.
Things are at a fever pitch right now, and now is the best time to be able to jump in when it comes to being able to bet on all these MLB games. The postseason is starting on Tuesday, and my bookie wants to make it even more profitable and even easier for you to make some money by using the promo code Greg on your first deposit. That is my name, G-R-E-G, nothing special, no big characters or anything like that, just my name, G-R-E-G. You're able to get your first deposit doubled up to $1,000. Rollover does apply, but when it comes to my bookie, you're able to bet on the sided total on all these games. You're able to go into the player prop market. You're able to bet on things outside of baseball as well. Obviously, we've got a whole bunch of football, college and professional. Big Ten football is going to be starting up. Obviously, the college basketball season starts in November. You guys know that I love that. So you're able to bet on a little bit of everything. So go to my bookie, type in the promo code Greg. Your parlays, not that I'm doing any of them, but they will be more profitable if you wind up taking them. You're going to be able to get your first deposit doubled dollar for dollar. So a big thanks to them for helping us out. And a big thanks to the Milwaukee Brewers who somehow, someway, have a chance to be able to make the postseason. They wind up knocking out the St. Louis Cardinals on Sunday by a count of 3-0 for the Milwaukee Brewers. Brandon Woodruff was absolutely masterful. 10 punchouts, 2 hits given up in 8 innings. Josh Hader comes in for the save for the Brewers. Pair of home runs in the 4th inning got them to victory. Daniel Vogelbach goes deep off of Adam Wainwright in the 4th for his 4th home run of the campaign. And Ryan Braun, who might be in his final season, 8th home run of the season, both off of Wainwright. And for Wainwright, he goes 6 2/3 innings, giving up 3 runs, those 2 home runs. And you have Andrew Miller, Ryan Hazley, along with Taylor Webb from there, coming in for relief. But for the St. Louis Cardinals, story of the day, nothing doing on offense, getting a grand total of 2 hits. Nothing doing for the San Francisco Giants on offense either, as they wound up getting passed by the Milwaukee Brewers for that final postseason spot. 6-2, the final. Going to be very interesting to see the race in this one. As for the Padres, they were able to put up a 3 spot in the 9th inning. As in the 9th inning, they were able to get a home run off the bat of Mitch Moreland, his 2nd as a San Diego Padre. Tommy Pham, his 3rd home run of the campaign. And then earlier in the game, Fernando Tatis Jr. goes deep for his 17th home run of the season. That came off of Johnny Cueto, who managed to give the team 6 3rd innings. Bullpen is relatively rested. And then from there, Wandy Peralta was able to give the team 5 outs. Sean Anderson wound up finishing up the 9th after Tony Watson gave up those 2 home runs in the 9th, giving up 3 runs without recording an out. But for the Giants, 1 of 6 with men in scoring position, 7 total hits, despite the fact that Zach Davies comes in on short rest. He only goes 3 innings, but he doesn't give up a single run. Craig Stamen, Garrett Richards, 2 innings apiece. You wind up having Tim Hill give up 2 runs out of the bullpen, but Trevor Rosenthal, Dan Altavia, they were able to close the door. Padres now 36-23. I believe that they are now locked into that 4th spot. The Colorado Rockies and Arizona Diamondbacks are locked into not going into the postseason, but for the Rockies, a good win on Saturday. They take down the Diamondbacks by a count of 10-3. For Herman Marquez, 7 innings, and it was very interesting as He gave up 3 runs, none of which were earned. There were 4 errors out there in the field. Ryan McMahon and Trevor Story both their 10th. Marquez had one himself, and then you had Daniel Murphy also committing an error out there in the field. But for the Colorado Rockies, 3 of 9 with men in scoring position. You had Ryan McMahon make up for that error with a home run, his 9th of the campaign. Elias Diaz, his 2nd for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Luke Weaver, it looked like was doing a little bit better coming into this game. Not so much on this one. He gave up a home run, 5 runs total, 4 of which were earned, give it up over the course of 5 innings. Silvino Bracco winds up coming into this game. He winds up giving up 2 runs in an inning, and then Hector Rondon gives up 3 runs in an inning to rock that 7.65 ERA. And for the Arizona Diamondbacks, 2 of 7 with men in scoring position. Offense just continues to scuffle. Speaking of scuffling, the Oakland A's hit a whole lot of that on Saturday as they wind up losing a pair of games to the Seattle Mariners. First one went to extra innings. Mariners wind up pulling off a 5-1 win. Kyle Seager winds up hitting his 8th home run of the campaign to really help this team out to victory in extra innings. It was a very good pitcher's duel early, as for the Seattle Mariners, Justice Sheffield was serving it up. 5 innings pitch, he gives up just 1 run. Casey Sadler comes in for an inning, and then Kendall Graveman, scoreless 7th and 8th innings, despite the man starting on second base. And for the Oakland A's, good start here for Mike Minor. You have to like to see that. 5 innings pitch, 7 strikeouts, gives up 1 run. Joaquin Soria gave the team an inning. But then Liam Hendricks, who came into this game with like a 1 ERA, gives up 3 runs, 2 of which were earned while recording 4 outs. Lou Trevino winds up giving up that home run to Seager. And for the Oakland A's, offensive woes continue. 1 of 11 with runners in scoring position. Not good there. And then in game 2, they just got completely destroyed. 12-3, the final. As for the Seattle Mariners, it was batting practice served up by Paul Blackburn. He gives up 7 runs and he records 7 outs in the process. And then from there, everyone that entered out of the Oakland A's bullpen gave up a home run. James Caprillion, hopefully I'm saying that one correctly, he gave up 2 runs while recording 5 outs, including 1 home run. Jordan Weems gave up a home run. He gave up 2 runs in an inning. TJ McFarland gave up a home run. He gave up 1 run in an inning. For the Oakland A's, Robbie Grossman was able to get a pair of home runs. His 7th and 8th home runs of the campaign, he got those off of Justin Gitter Dunn, who wound up giving up those 2 home runs, 3 total runs over the course of 5 innings. Walker Lockett comes in and he's able to provide the team with 6 outs. But for Kyle Seager, 9th home run of the campaign. Tim Lopez gets his 2nd, and then you have Evan White being able to get his 8th home run of the campaign. As for the Seattle Mariners, 7 of 13 with men in scoring position. They did that with Kyle Lewis getting a little bit of rest in game 2 of that double dip. If you wound up having the over in this one, I feel sorry for you, and I feel sorry for myself, because the Pittsburgh Pirates and Cleveland Indians wind up playing an 8-0 game that goes away of the Pirates. Total on this game was 8. You wound up having it being 8-0 in the top of the 4th inning, and then the game died for the Pittsburgh Pirates. 3 of home runs in this one. Jose Ozuna, his 3rd home run of the campaign. Mr. Brian Reynolds is 7th, and then Kyle Moran is 10th. Those came off of Aaron Civale. Aaron Civale, who wound up having his first, I believe, 13 starts of his career, giving up 3 runs or fewer. He gave up 8 over the course of 4 innings. Tristan McKenzie and Logan Allen, 5 innings of relief for the Cleveland Indians. Good sign for them there, but for the Cleveland Indians, they also squandered a bunch of scoring opportunities, 0-5 with men in scoring position. And for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Joe Musgrove, 7 strong innings. He punches out 10. Only 1 walk surrendered, and then Nick Tropiano and Davideus Nevekarazquez come in for an inning of relief apiece. There was no relief for the Cincinnati Reds, who are now 30-29, and I believe might be finding themselves in a little bit of hot water as well. 7-3, the final of this one. As for the Cincinnati Reds, they wind up going 2 of 7 with men in scoring position. Luis Castillo can only give the team 4 innings. He gives up 4 runs in the process, and then from there, Anthony DeSclafani continues to stink. He's rocking that 7.22 ERA. 3 runs given up over the course of 3 innings. For the Minnesota Twins, they don't wind up getting a home run, but they go 5-12 with men in scoring position. The Twins have been the top under team at home in the big leagues going into the series. They've now played both of these games in the series to the over. Michael Pineda, not necessarily the start they were looking for. 2 runs given up over the course of 4 innings, but Tyler Clippard was able to give the team a scoreless inning. Cody Sashek wound up giving up a run while recording 4 outs, but then Taylor Rogers and Ty Duffy both give the team 4 outs, not giving up a single run. And for Duffy, 3 punch outs in the process. Minnesota Twins now 36-23. And for the Cincinnati Reds, they need to win to really ensure themselves a playoff spot. If you wound up having the Dodgers on the run line on Saturday, this was a rough one. They wind up winning against the LA Angels by a count of 7-6. Urio Teran winds up getting the start for the Angels instead of Dylan Bundy. And boy, did he stink it up. 52 pitches used up in 1 inning. He gives up 3 runs in the process. And then from there, Jacob Barnes, 2 scoreless innings. You wind up having No Ramirez give the team 2 scoreless innings. But then Ansel Robles, improves upon his 7.91 ERA, giving up two runs in an inning. Heath Milner, along with Mr. Lucas Bard, both give up a run as well. And for the LA Angels, they were able to do a good job with men in scoring position. They went 4 of 10 with that regard for the LA Dodgers. Tony Gonsolin, his worst start of the year, he gives up 4 runs over the course of 6 innings. And then Alex Wood, who I thought might actually start the game on Sunday because it's a to-be-determined gentleman, he winds up giving up 2 runs, one of which was earned in 1 1/3 innings. Joe Kelly came in for a hold, and Adam Kolarik was able to get the save. And for the Dodgers, trio of home runs here. Edwin Rios, along with Will Smith, both get their 8th home run in the campaign, and Jock Peterson goes deep for his 7th. Speaking of teams out there on the, I guess you could call it West Coast part of the country, that'd be the Texas Rangers. They're in the Western Division, so we'll give them that. The Rangers wind up taking out the Houston Astros by a count of 6-1. Just an absolutely pitiful display by the Houston Astros. Lance McCullers, he looked good. He went 4 innings. He punched out 9. And then you wind up bringing in Brandon Bielak. He gives up 4 runs in 2 innings. Andre Scrub looked like a scrub. He gave up 2 runs in an inning. And for the Houston Astros, 3 runs or fewer generated now 13 out of their last 16 games. For Kyle Gibson, no runs given up over the course of 6 innings. He did give up 6 hits, but he was able to evade danger. From there, Jimmy Hergot gives up a run, and then you have Jesse Chavez along with Mr. DeMarcus Evans give a scoreless inning. And for the Texas Rangers, pair of home runs. Jeff Mathis, his start of the campaign. Leody Taveras winds up getting his 4th. So, a nice little sign for the Texas Rangers that I haven't had much to cheer about. For the Philadelphia Phillies, you could cheer about the fact that they are not going to make the postseason. 4-3, the final in this one. For Zach Wheeler, he was not dealing in this one. He gives up 4 runs over the course of 7 innings. You then have from there the untrustworthy bullpen of Connor Brogdon give the team a scoreless inning. It's completely understandable why they kept Zach Wheeler in the game for that long. For the Philadelphia Phillies, 3 of 11 with men in scoring position. Andrew McCutchen did all that he could. He got his 10th home run of the campaign. That came off of Peter Fairbanks. For Fairbanks, he wound up coming into the game for an inning and gave up that home run. Ryan Yarbrough was a bulk guy. 3 1/3 innings. He wound up getting into a little bit of danger with 3 hits, but he didn't give up a single run. And then you had Diego Castillo give the team a scoreless inning. And then they had a 3-inning save from Aaron Slager. That was something that you just don't see very often for the Rays. They just took advantage of the fact that they cash in every time they got men on base. 4 of 6 with runners in scoring position. So despite the fact that the Phillies got 12 hits and the Rays got 7 and the Rays committed 2 errors, the Rays were able to get the job done. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, exactly how the season has went in general for them. For the New York Mets, the season in general for them has not went well, and they wound up losing both games of their doubleheader against the Washington Nationals. In Game 2, it was the Nationals being able to get a 5-3 win for the Mets in this one. Rick Porcello looked terrible. 5 runs surrendered over 3 innings, so 2 of those were unearned. But then from there, Erasmo Ramirez, Dylan Betances, Jared Hughes all provided a scoreless inning out of the bullpen. And for Pete Alonso, he made up for the error they committed a little bit earlier in the game with his 14th home run in the campaign. But for the Washington Nationals, they go 4 of 13 with men in scoring position, including Trey Turner down for what? Getting his 11th home run in the campaign for Anibal Sanchez. Decent start here. He gave up 3 runs in 5 1/3 innings. Wander, I swear, this guy sucks. Wound up recording 2 outs, and then he set things up for Danny Hudson to be able to get his 10th save of the campaign. And then in Game 1, it was the Washington Nationals coming back on Jacob deGrom and company by a count of 4-3. For Jacob deGrom, he winds up going 5 innings. He allows 3 runs, giving up 2 home runs. Not Jacob deGrom, like he did get 10 punch-outs, and he had an over 102-mile-per-hour pitch. But in this one, how about Andrew Stevenson being able to go deep for his first 2 home runs of the season? All of his home runs so far this year have come off of Jacob deGrom. That's something nice to say. For Mad Max Scherzer, he winds up being able to get a win. He gave up 2 home runs himself, giving up 3 total runs over the course of 6 innings. Will Harris was able to come in for the save, and for the New York Mets, the untrustworthiness of Miguel Castro continues. He winds up giving up a run while recording just an out for the Mets. Their home runs came off the bat of Amed Rosario's 4th of the campaign, and Wilson Ramos winds up being able to get his 5th. So that was certainly very fascinating. Both of those games wind up going over the total. Speaking of games that wind up going over the total, that would be what we saw in the Boston Red Sox and Atlanta Braves game. And the Boston Red Sox are starting to win games. 8-2, the final in this one. For the Boston Red Sox, Tanner Houck looked very good in this one once again. He winds up getting 3 starts for the team, and he gives up 1 run this year. He punched out 10, gave up 1 run in this one over the course of 6 innings. He did give up a home run, but then you add from there, Phillips Valdez give up an unearned run out of the bullpen. Austin Bryce and Andrew Triggs scoreless innings out of the bullpen for the Atlanta Braves. Dansby Swanson had sent home run the campaign, and the Atlanta Braves were trying to give Tucker Davidson a start, and boy, did it not go well. Not necessarily all his fault. Adeni Echevarria had a terrible error out there in the field, so in the course of his 5 outs, he did give up 7 runs, only 2 of which were earned. And then from there, you wound up having 2 2/3 innings of relief from Grant Dayton, who gave up a run. You wound up having to go to AJ Minter for an inning, Taylor Mazek for four outs, and then you wound up having to get two and a third innings out of Jacob Webb for the Atlanta Braves. They go one of seven with Ben in scoring position, and for Hook, he certainly ended the year on a high note as he looked like Captain Hook. The Chicago White Sox, they looked like captains of the overtrain as they wind up taking down the Chicago Cubs by a count of 9-5. John Lester, one of the most unpredictable pitchers out there in baseball, laid an egg. He winds up giving up seven runs in 3 2/3 innings, giving up a home run in the process. He also had a home run given up by Jason Adam, who winds up going for four outs, gives up two runs. I will say, you had Ryan Tepera, along with Jeremy Jeffries, Craig Kimbrell, and Dan Winkler, being able to give the team some good relief. But for the Chicago Cubs, they were able to get a home run off the bat of Chris Bryant. I believe it was of the Grand Slam variety. His third of the campaign for the Chicago White Sox. It was Dane Dunning who gave that up. He gives up five runs for which were earned over the course of three innings, but then Matt Foster, along with Aaron Bummer, Evan Marshall, Alex Colome, all provided an inning of relief, and Garrett Crochet, first player to not play any minor league baseball or foreign baseball prior to making his MLB debut since Mike Leake in 2010. Two scoreless innings out of the bullpen, three punch-outs. He throws over 100 miles an hour. He's a guy that you want to watch in this postseason. Along with Yoan Moncada, he got his sixth home run in the campaign, and James McCann is seventh. So Southsiders is able to get off the shine after I believe that they had lost six out of their last eight. A team that has been on a slide pretty much all year long, that'd be the Kansas City Royals, and they wind up losing to the Detroit Tiger Rays by a count of 4-3. This was a game that, once again, really died as the game went along, as it was 4-3 in the third inning, and then no scoring after that, as Matthew Boyd winds up giving up a home run, but not too bad. Six innings pitching, he gave up three runs. Joe Jimenez, Jose Cicerano, Brian Garcia all go a scoreless inning. And for the Detroit Tigers, they wind up going 5-8 with runners in scoring position. It was not a good start for Cesar Hernandez. He winds up giving up four runs, three of which were earned while recording five outs. And then the bullpen from there. Trio of guys that wound up giving the team two-plus innings of scoreless baseball. Josh Stamatt, Jake Newberry, Mike Montgomery, all either two or two and a third innings of scoreless baseball for Montgomery and Newberry. Three and four punch-outs, respectively. Tyler Zuber winds up striking out the side in the ninth inning, so he was able to do his job. And for the Kansas City Royals, not a lot of offense other than Idolberto Mondesi getting a first inning home run off of Matthew Boyd, his fifth, and I believe that four of those home runs came in the final 2 weeks, so he was able to have a little bit of a surge there. Speaking of a surge, that's what the New York Yankees had against the Miami Marlins on offense. 11-4 the final in this one. Trevor Rogers is someone that the Miami Marlins are going to hope gets a little bit better. He looked good in this one. It was pretty much an open. He went three innings. He didn't give up a single run, but how about Stephen Tarpley, the former New York Yankee? He was absolutely terrible. He recorded one out and he gave up five runs. He's now rocking a 9 ERA. 7.20 is the ERA of Ryan Stanek, former opener of the Tampa Bay Rays, opened things up to giving up runs. He wound up recording five outs. He gave up three runs in the process, and Nick Vinson gave up three runs while recording five outs as well for the Miami Marlins. They leave 10 men on base. They don't get a single home run as they still manage to get to Davey Garcia for four runs over the course of 6 2/3 innings, but Adam Ottavino was able to get out of the seventh. And then from there, you wind up getting two innings of scoreless relief out of Miguel Yajur for the New York Yankees. As for the Yankees, they were able to get Luke Voit, his 22nd home run of the campaign. I don't know about you, but he's feeling 22. Tyler Wade is third, and Aaron Hicks is sixth, as the team wound up having Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, all the big bombers out there. So that is certainly a very good sign for the New York Yankees, and it's a very good sign for the Toronto, aka Buffalo Blue Jays, that they were able to get a win over the Baltimore Orioles. 5-2 the final in this one. John Means meant business. Very tough luck loser here. He punches out 9 in 6 innings, gives up one run, and then the bullpen of Hunter Harvey did not do well. He gave up three runs, two of which were earned. You then had Tanner Scott give up an unearned run, as you had Ramon Urias along with Pedro Severino commit their fourth errors of the year for the Baltimore Orioles on offense. They went 1-6 with runners in scoring position as they wind up getting 9 hits, and they don't do a lot with it. Meanwhile, the Toronto Blue Jays, 5 runs on 5 hits, including 2 home runs. Randall Grichuk, his 12th home run of the campaign. Kevon Biggio wound up taking Means deep for his 5th. TJ Zuch wound up getting the start in this one. It was supposed to be, if I remember correctly, them going with Matt Shoemaker. Instead, Zeech winds up going 5 scoreless innings. You have Chase Anderson come out of the bullpen for 2 innings of relief. Ross Stripling wound up giving up 2 runs. He's just been terrible all year long, but with that said, Anthony Bass was able to get the save, hook, line, and sinker. 4 outs to be able to get that save, so obviously very encouraging there. And it's always encouraging to have our good buddy Scott Seidenberg on this podcast. He does a terrific job of a little bit of everything. He handicaps in football. He does a great job giving out his baseball play of the day on his Twitter feed at Scott's On Air. We're going to be talking to him next about trying to handicap the final day of the season and just looking forward to the postseason in general. That's on the other side right here on the Baseball Betting Podcast. Myself, Craig Peterson.
Greg is calling in a pinch hitter from the Overtime Network hotline.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Podcast. Myself, Greg Peterson. It is always great to be joined by this guest, as this is a man that's out there in the great state of New York. He handicaps a little bit of everything. The MLB certainly has been doing a lot when it comes to college basketball, so I'm sure that he is very happy about that. He hosts a wide variety of podcasts, mainly to do with college football and the NFL, but he's a man that does a variety of different things. He always gives out his play of the day when it comes to the MLB on his Twitter handle, and that is at Scott's On Air, as it is Scott Seidenberg joining me on the podcast, and it is always great to have you aboard, my friend. How are you?
Greg, we made it, right? Like, who thought when the season started and we had all the COVID cancellations that we would actually get through an entire, albeit shortened, Major League Baseball regular season, and here we are approaching the final day of the regular season.
The sharp money certainly was not on us getting to this point, so I am very, very happy that we have made it to this point. And I'm also very happy that we've got some interesting postseason races. Somehow, some way, the Milwaukee Brewers are alive for a postseason berth. I have no idea how. I have no idea why. But here we are with the Brewers sending out Brett Anderson on Sunday against Austin Gomber of the St. Louis Cardinals. If they wind up winning in the San Francisco Giants, I'm pretty sure that the Brewers actually get in by default. If you wind up having a variety of these teams win, then I think things get very hairy, because the Cardinals would be 29-29. The Brewers would be 30-30. Then you need the St. Louis Cardinals to play against the Detroit Tigers. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I think that you need like Martians to come down to decide and play rock, paper, scissors to make the decision as to who's going to be making the postseason from there. So certainly going to be fascinating, but I certainly do think that that is going to be the marquee game for Sunday. And how do you view this one? Because I take a look at the Brewers, the offense has been absolutely anemic, but having a veteran like Brett Anderson might get me to gravitate towards Brewers a little bit.
Yeah, I think the way that I might approach this game, it's crazy to say that it's going to have a playoff-like feel, but it actually is, because it's so important. This is basically a playoff game for these teams, that I would lean towards the under in this game, because I do like Brett Anderson to keep it relatively low scoring, and I can't exactly say I'm so confident in the Brewers offense to light it up, even though they're going up against Austin Gomber, Gomber Pyle, whatever you want to call him. But I do think that this is a game that, you know, we tend to see playoff games be towards the low scoring end. And I could see this one being low scoring because it has that type of playoff atmosphere.
I am actually right there with you. And with Austin Gomber, he's actually been good this year. He's got a .180 ERA. I remember he really didn't pitch at all in the major leagues during the 2019 season, but I rode him a little bit during the 2018 season. He never really pooped the bed on me. So this is someone that is actually relatively solid. So I'm right there with you. As of right now, we've got no numbers up on this game.
Yeah, you would think it's going to be like, I would say 8.5.
I was going to say between 8 and 8.5, yeah.
Yeah, I would guess 8.5, and I would lean towards the under there.
Yep, I am in total agreement with you there. That's certainly something I'm going to take a look at. This has a feel of a first team to be able to get to 3, maybe 4 runs is going to win it. So we are in lockstep on that one. And I think that we're both in lockstep as to not really knowing a lot about the pitcher that's going to be going for the New York Yankees, Clark Schmidt. If you would have told me that he would be starting the last game of the season for the New York Yankees on January 1st, I would have told you that you're full of Schmidt. But here we are right now. But he's someone that he used to pitch for South Carolina. Certainly has not gotten a lot of run. He's going to be going up against Jose Urania of the Miami Marlins. As I'm seeing it right now, the Marlins are right around a plus 150, even as high as a plus 160 underdog. This is one of these cases in which Schmidt no doubt has a lot to pitch for, because this is a big audition for him. But when you're getting like plus 160 with a playoff team like the Miami Marlins, that's hard to pass down in this spot.
Yeah, you just wonder the motivation for both of these teams in what they're playing for. Miami appears to be locked into, we don't know what position, but I guess they can move up or down one or two slots. You know that they have already clinched, and they want to make sure that their bullpen is as healthy and rested as can be for that wild card series, same as the Yankees. And for Schmidt, you're right, this is an audition for him, because he could find himself on this postseason roster and pitching meaningful innings for the Yankees come Tuesday. Well, I wouldn't expect him to be in the first game, but you know, like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whenever they would need him. So I like Schmidt. I give the advantage to the Yankees. LeMahieu's going for the batting title. He's closing in on it. The line is so high that you're right. I would kind of would rather take the plus money on the Marlins, But this is one of those games where, honestly, I have no pick one way or another because I don't know what I'm getting for either of these teams. And if I had to go with a play, I might actually go with the over because I think both teams might just get into the bullpens and just throw guys that we won't even see pitch ever again in 2020.
Yeah, this is certainly going to be a difficult day in general to handicap, as we do have Scott Seidenberg joining me on the podcast. If you had me rank from 1 to 10, the easiest versus the most difficult days to handicap in all of baseball, I would say like the first 15 games of the season are typically for me a little bit easier because you know that guys are going to be rested. You know that the motivation, no doubt, at the beginning of the season is going to be there. For me, it's always like the last series, the last two series, which is going to be super difficult because you've got a game like the St. Louis Cardinals and the Milwaukee Brewers. Both of these teams have everything to play for. You've got the San Francisco Giants, who are going to be trotting out their Drew Smyly. They have everything in the world to play for. And then you've got a team like, say, the Boston Red Sox, who are going to be trotting out their Nick Pavetta against the Atlanta Braves, who have already clinched their playoff spot. Neither of these teams have anything to play for whatsoever. And it's just a very interesting ebb and flow because you've got a couple games in which it's do or die for these teams, and you've got a couple games in which, all right, after the game, where are we going out to dinner? And then when are we making our tea times for Monday?
Yeah, so I look at those type of situations and I favor the underdogs. Or you might have a situation where one of those perceived underdogs is actually a favorite just because of the matchups and who's in the lineup and who's pitching. But you know what I'm talking about. I would favor the non-playoff teams going up against the playoff teams. Why? Because there's a sense of pride. Finish the season with some respect here. The Red Sox are going out and they're playing on a Braves team that already won their division and they got their sights set on locking in on the two seed. They know they're going to be home before going to the eventual bubble. So they're probably, you know, getting ready to pack, staying comfortable and enjoying their last couple of days with their families before they head out to their bubble after they win a first round series likely. And I think that there's motivation on the side of these underdog teams to kind of show some pride and finish the season with a little bit of dignity and respect as opposed to just laying down and being walked over.
It certainly is going to be so fascinating to see what happens with so many of these games in which you've got teams that, let's face it, they're either locked into their playoff spot or they're just completely out of it as well. And I do think that sometimes it can lead to a slugfest. Like right now, I'm taking a look at the Baltimore Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays game. Tanner Roark has been getting shelled left, right, and sideways. And then you've got Keegan Aiken of the Baltimore Orioles who's going to be going out there. For Keegan Aiken, he's had a couple nice starts, but it just felt like after he had those couple nice outings against the New York Yankees, he got figured out. He wound up getting shelled. Tanner Roark can't hold teams to a touchdown at this point. It's just absolutely insane. I'm seeing a total of 10.5, and that's one that jumps out at me, and it's like, you know what? Whoever wins this game, they might be able to reach that total all by themselves.
Oh, yes. Made a lot of money this year betting on the overs in Buffalo. Salem Field is a top 10 ballpark in Major League Baseball in runs, in hits, offensive production. It's just a very comfortable place to play for these batters, whether it's the expanded batter's eye that they put in center field or whatever it is. Hitters are just enjoying themselves there. And especially when you're going up against Tanner Roark, you're enjoying yourself there as well. It could be windy up in Buffalo, and depending on which direction that wind's blowing in, it might lead to more runs going out of the ballpark. But I love overs at Salem Field, and I think you have two over teams here in the Orioles and the Blue Jays, and an over pitcher in Tanner Roark. I think you got to play that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. This is a spot in which I'm going to be taking a look at the over. I do think that there's a little bit of value on the Baltimore Orioles as well, because as we know, the Toronto Blue Jays, they've been dealing with a whole bunch of injuries. Last thing that they want is to have someone wind up going out of the lineup because they were playing a game number 60 when they were locked into the postseason and everything like that. As we do have Scott Seidenberg joining me on the podcast. And Scott, what is also going to be very intriguing is that the postseason is going to be starting on Tuesday. There is still some jockeying when it comes to playoff positioning. So there is a little bit of intrigue when it comes to that. But just taking a look at these postseason series, I do think that we could see just a whole lot of hoopla when it comes to all of this, just because now you've got three game series. These are not going to be played in the bubble quite yet. After the wild card round, that's when you wind up getting these games inside of the bubbles that have been set up by Major League Baseball. But I just take a look at all of this and I think, man, this is certainly a format that is probably going to lend itself to a lot of unders because you've got a lot of teams that are going to be in like those 4-5 matchups. Or even a favorite like the Dodgers, if they wind up getting down 3-1, they've got the best bullpen ERA up there in the big leagues. And you've got to think that they're going to be throwing out there all the stops to avoid an embarrassing defeat.
I look at certain teams that I like to focus in on come the postseason, and I'm not just being a homer here, but I think whenever you're involving the New York Yankees in a conversation about the postseason, you have to throw out the number that's next to them because it doesn't mean anything. The fact that they are a lower seed than whoever they're going to play against, whether it's the White Sox or maybe there's some, you know, change in the standings when it winds up being somebody else, or the Indians maybe, means nothing because the Yankees are going to throw out Gerrit Cole in game one. And regardless of who they face, they should be favored in that matchup. And then they'll have Masahiro Tanaka in game two. And then the question comes, who are they going to throw in game three? Is it Jay Happ? Is it Davey Garcia, who made a strong case for himself? And then with the Yankees offense getting healthy at the right time, I know they've been underwhelming this week, but Sanchez and Giancarlo Stanton are back healthy. You got the batting champ in DJ LeMahieu, Gleyber Torres. And I know Gary Sanchez has struggled and he might not be trusted behind the plate, and you'll go with Kyle Higashioka. But if Sanchez is there, he does have the pop, and he's shown it this year with home runs in big spots. I just think the Yankees are a very dangerous team. They were a team that everybody expected to make it to the World Series from the American League before the season even started. So I think regardless of what their seed is, you have to like the Yankees' chances to move on.
And what else I'm noticing when it comes to the postseason as well is that everyone's chic pick to be able to make a run in the National League is the Cincinnati Reds. We saw it before the season. Everyone founding the Cincinnati Reds season win total over, and they certainly have been playing much better baseball recently, but there's a reason why the Cincinnati Reds currently sit here at 30-29, in my opinion. Certainly you've got Trevor Bauer, who's been absolutely terrific. You have Luis Castillo, who's got one of the better changeups that you're going to find out there in the big leagues. But when you take a look at this team, other than really Shogo Akiyama and Jesse Winker, everyone on this team is hitting like a 230 or lower. It's absolutely insane. Kyle Farmer has been able to get a couple more at-bats recently as well, but I just take a look at this team. Certainly, they're able to hit a couple home runs, but I just can't buy into the Reds at this point, even though it feels like everyone is saying, oh, you don't want to play the Reds. It's just one of these things in which you need to make contact with the ball in order for it to fly out, and they just haven't done enough of it to have me intrigued by this team.
Yeah, look, I like their rotation, right? Because it's going to be Bauer, then it'll probably be Castillo in game two, Sonny Gray in game three, right? Or maybe they flip-flop Gray and Castillo. I don't think so. I think it's going to be Bauer, Castillo, and then Gray. What's Archie Bradley's status? Is he going to be able to play or not? How healthy is he going to be? And what's their offense going to do? And what's the matchup going to be? Because right now, I think they're lined up against the Padres. Is darling as the Reds were, if they're playing the Padres in this wild card round, I don't know. I love the Reds rotation, but I love the Padres lineup much more than I love the Reds rotation. It's going to be very intriguing to see how they match up with. I love the pitching, and I would lean towards betting the unders in their games just because of their starting pitching, but I can't say that they're a lock to advance to the bubble.
Yeah, this is going to be so intriguing to see what's going to happen with the Padres as well, as we do have Scott Seidenberg joining me on the podcast. It looked like they had really gotten themselves a very good rotation going into the postseason. And then we saw Mike Clevinger a couple days ago. He left the start that he had after the first inning due to some, I believe it was like bicep tightness, something to do with his arm. It looks like he might be out for the entire postseason. And then we saw Dinelson Lamet in that doubleheader a couple days ago against the San Francisco Giants. He wound up leaving early. He's currently listed as day-to-day, but it looks like he's probably not going to be returning at minimum for the first round of the postseason. I certainly do have my concerns about the Padres as well, just because with all those injuries to the pitching staff, the bullpen has been better recently, but I just wonder who's going to be out there and is going to be able to give the team consistent innings, because let's say that they do wind up getting past that first round matchup and you still don't have Clevinger and Lamet. Who do you wind up starting? Because it would probably be someone like an Adrian Morejon, and that's not a guy that you want to be relying upon in the postseason.
Or like a Drew Pomeranz, you know, somebody who has... Yeah, I love your reaction there. But you know what I'm saying? It's somebody that has starter experience, right? You know, somebody that can eat innings, I guess. Zach Davies, he becomes the ace? I don't know. Lamet is somebody that you're going to have to rely on. I don't know what Clevinger's availability is going to be, but Lamet's the guy that you have to rely on. And Chris Paddock, what are you going to get from him? Does he become like the bullpen guy, like the first guy out of the bullpen? He maybe do that Nathan Eovaldi role as the starter going to the bullpen and then being the long guy if you need him? I think the Padres have a lot of questions with their pitching staff.
Yeah, I agree with you. It does look like Lamet has a good chance of being able to start in the postseason, whether that be on Wednesday or on Thursday, but certainly Not something that you want to see happen a couple days before the postseason, but something that you always love to see on this podcast is Scott Seidenberg joining me, because he does absolutely terrific work with his MLB Play of the Day on his Twitter feed at Scott's On Air. I know you're doing a lot of great podcasts when it comes to covering the NFL and college football as well. So love to give people at home know if they're able to follow you on social media and just what you're doing to handicap football, baseball, and I know you do a variety of different things, and you do so also well.
Yeah, just follow me on social media at Scott's On Air. We got the Football Betting Show, which is a podcast with myself and handicapper Brandon Lang, Two for the Money fame, of course. And then we got the Football Film Room podcast that I do with former LSU assistant Chris Landry. So all over football this time of the year, but that doesn't mean that I'm losing focus on baseball, Greg, because the postseason is here. I will have postseason plays up on my Twitter feed. Haven't been, you know, too focused in on the past couple of days just because these have been a couple of unpredictable days in Major League Baseball. So really trying to focus in on what these teams are going to look like come postseason time and really pick apart where you can find some advantages in these postseason matchups once we get a look at the lineups and the rotations.
Yeah, it's going to be just so much fun to watch this MLB postseason. Hopefully, if they wind up keeping the 16-team format, there's a little bit more incentive for some of these top teams. It would be very unfortunate to see the Dodgers wind up going out after a 3-game series after all that they put together this regular season. But we are not in normal times right now. And despite all that, Scott continues to do absolutely masterful work with all that he does. So big thanks to Scott Seidenberg for joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Podcast. Coming up next, I do give you a sign total on every game on Sunday's MLB betting board on something I like to call Touch 'Em All.
Welcome back to the Baseball Betting Podcast with Greg Peterson as we're off to a quality start, and now it's time to walk it off in a grand fashion.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Podcast. Myself, Greg Peterson, a special thanks to Scott Seidenberg doing a great job of handicapping a little bit of everything. We've heard him on so many sporadic radio broadcasts with like ESPN New York, just ESPN nationally as well. He does some work for NBC Sports. List goes on and on. This is a man that wears very many hats, and he does so well. So always good to get him aboard. And it's always good to be able to talk about the sign and total on every game every day with you guys. This is the last day of the MLB regular season, so I'm going to give you a sign total on every game that has a listed line on it. So let's get into it right now. It's something I like to call Touch 'Em All.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch 'em all.
As I was noting a little bit earlier, there are quite a few games that are currently off the board. We're going to be seeing a whole bunch of pitching adjustments, everything like that, so it'll make things very fascinating for trying to handicap all these games, but I'm going to do my level best for you. Just note that there might be some changes on a few of these plays, and if there are changes, they will be listed up on my Twitter feed at JRSquirty1. So let's dive into it, beginning with game number 901-902 on the betting board. You got the Houston Astros hitting the road to face off against the Walker Texas Rangers. And by the way, I believe that all these games are going to be starting at either 12:05 p.m. Pacific, which is 3:05 p.m. Eastern, or 2:05/2:10 p.m. Pacific, which is more around 5:10 p.m. Eastern. So a lot of games are sort of in the same window, but starting with 901-902 on the betting board, it is the Houston Astros on the road facing off against Walker, Texas Rangers. It is going to be Jordan Lyles going for the Walker, Texas Rangers. Meanwhile, for the Houston Astros, it was to be determined. It looks like they're going to be settling on Chase DeYoung in this spot. No numbers up on this game. If it is indeed Chase DeYoung, well, I'm going to have to wind up taking a look at the Texas Rangers. Now, Jordan Lyles has been absolutely terrible this year. 1-6 record, 7.08 ERA. He's had one good start, though. That came against the Houston Astros. Actually, he's had two good starts so far this year. They both came against the Houston Astros. In his last five starts, in three of his starts, he's given up at least four runs. In the other two starts, he's given up three or fewer. Guess what? Both came against the Houston Astros. With the Houston Astros, this is a team that scored three runs or fewer, and I believe not 13 out of their last 16 games. This is a team that is a complete shell of themselves. They need the trash cans back. They need all of it because they have not been able to save their lives. And with Mr. Chase DeYoung, you can't think that this is someone that's going to be giving the team more than about three innings. He's gotten one start so far this year that came on September 8th. That was against the Oakland A's. He wound up giving up four runs over the course of three innings, giving up a home run. He was someone that actually began the year with the Sugar Land Skeeters in Independent League. team and for the Houston Astros. Bullpen is not necessarily been terrible, but you can tell that the wheels are starting to fall off for a couple of these guys. Andre Scrub has been just walking a bunch of guys. That has wound up nipping him in the tuchus. He wound up using up 25 pitches on Saturday, so he's not going to be available. You're probably going to have someone like a Brooks Raley that's going to be available out of the bullpen, but I just don't know what they're going to be able to get out of long relief. And for the Houston Astros, this is a team that they just have a bunch of guys that aren't getting on base. Jack Mayfield, Dustin Garneau, Abraham Toro, along with Miles Straw, Jose Altuve, all hitting a 220 or lower for this team. And Martin Maldonado, despite right around a 340 on base, he has not been hitting well himself. You've got Michael Brantley, who has been in and out of the fold. He wound up getting the day off on Saturday. He's really been the main concept for this team. Carlos Correa is hitting right around a 250 to a 260, but he's got four home runs so far this year. Kyle Tucker has been able to hit a 270, but man, this is a team that they're resting guys right now, and they don't look good. Meanwhile, with the Texas Rangers, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, I believe, leads the league in singles. He's hitting right around a 285. Leodis Severo, so he's hitting a 220. And then you get Jeff Mathis, Renat Odor, Joey Gallo, Willie Calhoun, the out for the year, Elvis Andrews, all hitting a 200 or lower. Anderson Tejada's been able to give this team something, though. He's hitting a 250. And for the Texas Rangers, the bullpen pitching with guys like Taylor Hearn and company, it hasn't been great, but it hasn't been awful. Nick Goody is a guy that you want absolutely no part of, but I do think that Jordan Lyles somehow, someway is going to be able to give this team a couple innings. If you're looking at a plus price here with the Texas Rangers, I'm certainly going to be taking it. If the total is 9 or lower, I'm going to be taking a look at the over. At the point of 9.5 or higher, it's likely going to be an under. Check back in the morning on my Twitter feed at JarenScorty1. I just have a feeling that the Rangers will pull it up something like 5 or so in this game. I think that the Houston Astros going to continue to scuffle on offense. 903-904 on the betting board is up next. You've got the Detroit Tigers, and they're going to be hitting the road faceoff against the Kansas City Royals. It is Brady Singer who's going to be going for the Royals. Meanwhile, Jordan Zimmermann on the bump for the Detroit Tigers. Your total on this game is anywhere between 8.5 and 9.5. This is very strange. You've got 1-9 out there. That under is just a minus 120. The over is even. You've got a 9 out there. Over is minus 120. Under is even. And then you've got an 8.5 with the over at minus 115 and the under at minus 105. There are three books that have it up right now, and they all have a different total. And if you're taking a look at the side with the Kansas City Royals, you're going to be laying anywhere between minus 153 and minus 170. Meanwhile, your plus price here with the Detroit Tigers anywhere between plus 140 and plus 150. So this is a game that is presently all over the place. I think that there's going to be some stabilization in the morning. I think that it took a lot of people off guard the fact that Jordan Zimmermann still pitches because he's got a 964 ERA so far this year. He has a 257 whip. I always say that if your whip would be a bench press set of 10, that would be pretty respectable. You're doing a bad job. Let me tell you right now, I wish I could do 257 pounds for a set of 10. I mean, that's pretty darn impressive. Which Zimmermann, he wound up making a long appearance last week against the Cleveland Indians. That was on September 17th. He wound up giving him 5 runs in 1 2/3 innings. His first start of the year actually wasn't terrible. He gave up an unearned run in 3 innings against the St. Louis Cardinals, but this is someone that he wound up going, I believe it was 1 13 last year. He just is not good. Meanwhile, Brady Singer, he's actually looked better recently. He only made it 3 innings in his last start against the St. Louis Cardinals, but 3 runs or fewer given up in 4 out of his last 5 starts, 3 hits or fewer given up in each out of his last 3 starts, including a possible no-hit bid against the Cleveland Indians. Now, the Indians not necessarily been terrific, but he's been able to pitch quite well. He's backed up by a bullpen that's surprisingly in the top 10 when it comes to ERA. So you've got guys like Jesse Hahn, Greg Holland, Scott Barlow that have been able to do a good job, and Scott Barlow actually leads the league in total appearances at 30. And for the Kansas City Royals, this is a team that's getting a whole lot out of Salvador Perez. He's hitting a 382, 362 on base, double-digit amount of home runs. And then Edilberto Mondesi has been able to find a little bit of something. He, Ryan McBroom, along with Ed Olivares and Hunter Dozier have all been able to hit right in that neighborhood of about a 235 to a 250. Whit Merrifield is hitting more around a 285, along with Mikel Franco, who's been a very good addition for this team. Now, you've got a couple guys like Franchi Cordero, Alex Gordon, Nick Heath, Ryan O'Hearn, Nicky Lopez. These guys are hitting a 220 or lower, but you've been able to get a little bit of something out of these guys. For the Detroit Tigers, they've got some respectable bats as well. Willie Castro, Harold Castro, both of these guys, the brothers Castro, I guess you could say, hitting above a 300 for this bunch. Now, it looks like Nico Goodrum, along with Derek Hill, Dez Cameron, Grayson Griner, among a couple others like Christian Stewart, are not going to be closing out the year very strong. All these guys are hitting a 210 or lower, so that's been a little bit interesting. But Isaac Paredes has been able to give this team a little bit of something. Miguel Cabrera has his batting average at a 250. He had a 6 RBI day a couple days ago, so he hasn't taken down the season. Now, Jorge Bonifacio has been out of the fold a little bit recently. You also notice that the team was without Jamir Candelario, so got to think that they're going to be resting a couple guys in the spot, but I do think that Brady Singer is going to be able to give a good start. I think that this is just going to be batting practice for the Kansas City Royals. Jordan Zimmermann locked into a very big contract. You got to think that after that contract is done, he is never going to pitch again. This is a spot in which I'm going to be taking a look at the Kansas City Royals at minimum on a money line, if not a run line. Right now, there's no run line prices up, but we're going to be taking a look at that, and I'm going to be taking this total over. I would probably be feeling comfortable about a 9.5, but if you're able to get the 8.5, certainly go with that as well. We could move on to 905, 906 on the betting board as you've got yourself the Miami Marlins, and they're hitting the road face-off against the New York Yankees. It is going to be Jose Ureña who's going to be going for the Miami Marlins. Meanwhile, for the New York Yankees, as making the first start of his career, it is going to be our good friend Clark Schmidt. If you're looking at the Yankees, they are anywhere between a minus 160 and minus 170 favorite. Meanwhile, the plus price here with the fish anywhere between plus 145 and plus 155. Dolan's game range between 9.5 and 10 on the 9.5. Overs juice minus 120. Unders even on the 10. The under is minus 115. The over is minus 105. I just can't keep buying Clark Schmidt in this spot. I mean, with Clark Schmidt, he wound up never pitching beyond Double-A baseball during his career in the minor leagues. He's made a couple appearances so far this year. He's got an ERA that is north of 7. It has not necessarily been terrific. He does an okay job of limiting the walks at the minor league level. He had more around 2.7 walks per 9 innings and has only given up a half home run per 9 innings during his time out there in the minor leagues. But, I mean, in like high A ball / double A ball, he had an ERA that was hovering right around a 3.5. These aren't juice ball leagues or anything like that, so that concerns me a little bit. Meanwhile, Jose Ureña, you always have a little bit of concern whenever he takes him on because you just don't know what you're going to get out of him. 0-3 record. He's won 21 innings, giving up 4 home runs and 11 walks in the process. But for Jose Ureña, he's looked a little bit better recently. In his last two starts, he's went a combined 12 and 2/3 innings, giving up 6 runs. It's nothing great. It's nothing awful. He's backed up by a bullpen with guys like Brad Boxberger, Yimi Garcia, and company that are pretty respectable. And we know with the New York Yankees, bullpen is typically pretty solid as well, but you got to question how much rest they're going to be getting on this day as well. With the New York Yankees, they did have to wind up using Adam Ottavino for a little bit of a stint on Saturday. And then they had Miguel Yajur wind up coming out there for 2 innings. They've got a couple guys like Nick Nelson and company that they might be trying to essentially fill the void until the postseason. So you might see someone like Luis Sessa. But it was mentioned by our good buddy Scott Seidenberg, the fact that you've got DJ LeMahieu is hitting a 359 right now. He's been absolutely magnificent. Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Gio Urshela were all in the fold on Saturday as well. Luke Voit, I don't know about you, but he's feeling 22 because he's got 22 home runs so far this year. Aaron Hicks has upped his average to a 230. You've got Tyler Wade and Gary Sanchez that haven't necessarily done a lot, but then you take a look at the Miami Marlins. This is certainly a team that they still are showing some fight. You've got Garrett Cooper who's hitting above a 280. Jesus Aguiar has been in that neighborhood as well. Miguel Rojas hitting above a 300. Lewis Brinson along Jorge Alfaro have both hit the skids a little bit. Both of these guys are now hitting between a 225 and a 235, and you just have not necessarily been able to get anything out of Monte Harrison. I still remember when he was playing for the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. I believe it was in 2015. He wound up hitting like a buck 50 at the single A level, so that's not necessarily terrific, but you got John Birdie hitting a 255. I think that this might be a sneaky spot for the under. The Yankees wound up putting up a bunch of runs on Saturday. They're pretty relatively locked in with their playoff seeding, so I do think that they might give a lineup that has been just terribly banged up a little bit of rest. So I think that this is a good spot for a Marlins team that they're in the postseason for the first time in over 15 years. I think they're going to want to cap it off with a win. So we're going to be going with the total under, and I'm going to be going with the plus price here with the fish. 907, 908 on the betting board is up next. We've got the New York Metropolitans on the road facing off against Washington Nationals. Austin Voth is going to be going for the Nats. Meanwhile, Seth Lugo is on the bump for the New York Mets. Currently, this is a game that is off the board. I can tell you right now, both of these guys are probably going to be playing for some pride with Austin Voth. It was just an absolutely terrible year for him. That's reflected by the 6.25 ERA. He has looked significantly better recently, though. He has given up a combined 2 runs over his last 2 starts, which spanned a total of 12 innings. So he has been able to do a much, much better job, because prior to that, I think that he had given up 3+ runs in like 5 or 6 consecutive starts. Meanwhile, for Seth Lugo, this is his first go around as being a starter, and you gotta think that he's gonna want to highlight the fact that he should be remaining a starter. He has given up approximately 1 earned run in 3 out of his last 5 starts. In the other 2, he wound up giving up 3 runs on the road against the Toronto, aka Buffalo Blue Jays, and then he got completely shelled against the Philadelphia Phillies, but the team still wound up being able to get the victory there. For Lugo, he has gotten 46 strikeouts in 35 and a third innings. The length has gotten a little bit better as well. He has went at least 5 innings in 3 out of his last 4 starts. He has looked very good in the starter role and only given out 8 walks as well. For the New York Mets, you've got a bunch of guys that have been able to do a great job when it comes to their batting average as well. You got to think that there are a couple guys that they're going to want to try to pad those numbers as much as possible, because you got Jeff McNeil, Robinson Cano, Luis Galorme, all hitting above a 300 for this team, along with Dom Smith, and then you've got J.D. Davis, along with Amid Rosario, both hitting between a 245 and a 250. Todd Frazier, right in that neighborhood as well. Pete Alonso's had an absolutely terrible year, but he winds up getting his 14th homer on the campaign in that double dip against the Washington Nationals. Brandon Nimmo, on base percentage of above a 400 for the Washington Nationals. This is actually a team that has hit quite well. You've got a trio of guys hitting above a 330. Andrew Stevenson, Trey Turner down for what, and Juan Soto. And for all these guys, 390 or better on base. Problem is, when they've gotten these guys on base, they haven't been able to drive them in, as you've got Kurt Suzuki, along Luis Garcia, and even someone like a Josh Harrison, hitting between a 269 and a 279. Now, Brock Holt was absolutely terrible with the Milwaukee Brewers, but he's been able to do a little bit of something here with the Washington Nationals. Yadiel Hernandez just has not been able to produce at the big league level, and as we know, both of these bullpens have been far from terrific all year long. You expected a little bit more out of Dylan Betances. He wound up getting used up on Saturday. Got to figure that Edwin Diaz is probably going to be on call for this team, and then with the Washington Nationals, this is just a bunch that they wound up using up Danny Hudson and Wander. I swear, this guy sucks in game 2 of their doubleheader, so you got to figure that they're going to be a little bit taxed. If I'm taking a look at a side in this one, I would say that as long as the New York Mets are a pretty respectable favorite, like minus 135, minus 140-ish or lower, I'll probably be taking a look at them. Total of 9, I'd probably take over. If you're seeing it more in the double-digit range, I'd be taking a look at that under, but check back in the morning my Twitter feed at Jaren41 for set plays there. 909, 910 on the betting board is up next. You've got the San Francisco Giants, who are going to be playing host to the San Diego Padres for the Padres. It was supposed to be Zach Davies, wound up starting on Saturday, so it's out to be determined. And Drew Smyly is going to be going for the Giants, with there being an undetermined starter for the Padres. This is off the board with the San Francisco Giants, because they just had an absolutely terrible run of things on Saturday. They now must win to get in, because if they lose and the Milwaukee Brewers win, I believe that the Giants are knocked out of the postseason. So that is not good, to say the least. Meanwhile, you take a look at the Giants. This is a bunch that they had to dive into their bullpen a little bit on Saturday, but they were still able to get Johnny Cueto 6 1/3 innings. So that is going to help them out. You're going to have guys like Tony Watson who are going to be available for this team. I know that Caleb Barger has been used quite a bit. He wound up getting a little bit of rest as well. And for the San Francisco Giants, what's big for this team is that Mike Yastrzemski is back to full, because take a look at this. All these guys are hitting at minimum a 268 for this team. Wilmer Flores, Brandon Belt, Donovan Solano, Darren Ruff, Austin Dickerson, Mike Yastrzemski, Mauricio Dubon, and then you've got Austin Slater, and just behind Brandon Crawford and Evan Longoria, hitting in the neighborhood of a 255. That is pretty stinking impressive right now. For the San Diego Padres, this is a team that they certainly are a little bit banged up. They're hopeful that they're going to have Denelson Lamet for a postseason run. Mike Clevenger probably going to be done, though, but you do have quite a few guys in this lineup that still do a great job of being able to get on base. Trent Grisham has been able to give this team right around a 352 on base. Fernando Tatis Jr., along with Eric Hosmer, Austin Supernola, Drickson Profar, all guys are in between a 270 and as high as a 287 for Mr. Hosmer. Manny Machado sitting above a 300. He's been able to give this team 16 plus home runs. Tommy Pham is back to full. He's only hitting a 220, but he's looked a little bit better since coming off the injured list. Jake Cronenworth hitting a 292. Now with the Padres, they certainly did have to empty out the bullpen for their win on Saturday, because Zach Davies was pretty much in a spot in which he was just getting in some work. You got to figure that they're trying to set up their rotation for the postseason. So as a result, Garrett Richards pitched 2 innings. Trevor Rosenthal wound up pitching the 9th inning. Dan Altavilla had to come out there as well. If you're getting someone like an Adrian Mutahone, who's going to be starting for the San Diego Padres, certainly would be taking a look at the Giants in some sort of a run line, because with the Giants, this is a team that is going to be desperate for a win. Drew Smyly, 3.38 ERA so far this year. He has looked good ever since coming off the injured list. He has made two starts and a long relief appearance. He has given up a combined 5 earned runs in those 3 appearances. He's gotten at least 5 strikeouts in every one of them as well. Keep in mind, all these 5 1/3 innings or fewer, in 2 of those stints, he had 8 punch outs. The last time he wound up facing off against the Padres, 4 innings, gave up 2 runs, punched out 8, and you gotta figure that this is going to be a little bit of a higher scoring game. If the total is set at like 9, much like it was on Saturday, I'm gonna be taking a look at the over, and I'm gonna be taking a look at the Giants if it is Mr. Adrian Mutahone. But check back in the morning on my Twitter feed at JarenSquirty1. Still a lot of speculation there. 9-11, 9-12 on the betting board is up next. The Toronto Blue Jays is gonna be playing us to the Baltimore Orioles. Keegan Aiken goes for the Orioles. Meanwhile, Tanner Roark is on the bump for the Blue Jays. If you're looking at the Jays, going to be laying anywhere between minus 122 and minus 130. Your plus price here with the Baltimore Orioles, anywhere between plus 110 and plus 120. Total on this game is 9.5 with a 9.5. Unders anywhere between minus 110 and minus 115. Overs anywhere between even and minus 110. We were talking about this with Scott Seidenberg. I want absolutely no part of Tanner Roark. I mean, this is a flyball pitcher that is in a ballpark that lends itself to giving up a whole bunch of home runs. With Tanner Roark so far this year, 7.01 ERA, 43 2/3 innings, he's given up 14 home runs at 21 walks. That is absolutely terrible. I mean, just take a look at his recent work, ladies and gentlemen. He has given up at least 4 runs in 4 out of his last 5 starts, including his last start against the Baltimore Orioles. He went 5 innings, he gave up 4 runs. That says to me that this guy's not very good. Meanwhile, Keegan Aiken, I will give him this. He's kept the ball in the yard. 1 home run given up in 22 2/3 innings. This is a young gentleman, 25 years old. You got to figure that he's going to want to make a good impression going into the offseason. Now, in 2 out of his last 3 starts, they haven't necessarily gotten his plan. 4 innings or fewer, giving up 4 runs in both of those. But the other start was 5 scoreless against the Atlanta Braves. So he certainly has been in or miss. He has faced off against the Blue Jays once. In that start, he wound up going 4 1/3 innings, giving up 2 unearned runs. So he has been a little bit solid for the team. And with the Baltimore Orioles, this is a young team that you got to figure wants to put a little bit of a rubber stamp, a little nice star towards the end of the season, because you've got quite a few guys that are doing a good job of getting on base. You've got Ramon Urias, Ryan Mountcastle, Jose Iglesias, all hitting above a 330 for this team with a 385 or greater on base. Austin, the Sayes kid, along with Anser Alberto and Cedric Mullins, are all hitting between a 265 and a 280. DJ Stewart's hitting below the Mendoza line, but 352 on base for him. He wound up having like 6 home runs in a 8-game span. He was able to do a solid job there. Pedro Severino has fallen back to earth a little bit. He's hitting now a 250, and then whenever you got Jan Cisco out there, he only hits like a 220, but he's got a 350 on base as well. And for the Toronto Blue Jays, I expect them to maybe rest a couple guys. Randall Grichuk was a pinch hitter for the team on Saturday. They had Travis Shaw as a DH, but you're certainly getting quite a bit more out of a couple of these guys that were slow to start the year. Joe Panik, Travis Shaw, and Jonathan Villar are all hitting between a 229 and a 239, but all 3 of these guys do a solid job of being able to get on base. Jonathan Davis is hitting nearly a 300. Alejandro Kirk has come out of nowhere, and he's got a 400 on base, 375 batting average. He had a 4-8 game against the Yankees earlier in the week. You've got Randall Grichuk, who's hitting at 275. Vladimir Jr. has really been able to up that average to a 265. And then you've got Randall Grichuk, who's also got 12 home runs. Kevon Biggio's hitting in the neighborhood of a 250. Bo Bichette wound up getting the day off on Saturday, but you had Teoscar Hernandez. He and his 14-plus home runs and 290 batting average have certainly been solid. I think that runs are going to be a plenty in this spot, but Tanner Roark just continues to stink. The Baltimore Orioles, I think, are going to hit him and hit him hard. So for that reason, taking the plus price here with the Orioles, and I'm going to be taking this total over. 9-13, 9-14 on the betting board is up next. The battle for Chicago, as the Cubbies are going to be hitting the road to face off against the Southsiders, the Chicago White Sox. Edmer Azolay is going to be going for the Cubbies. Meanwhile, Reynaldo Lopez is on the bump for the Chicago White Sox. And if you're looking at the White Sox, you're going to be laying anywhere between minus 123 and minus 130. Plus price here with the Cubbies is anywhere between plus 110 and plus 120. Total on this game is 9.5. The over and under are anywhere between minus 105 and minus 115. A Lozley is just someone that I expected a little bit more out of. Ed Bear is actually a very nice first name, by the way. But getting back to the Cubs with Azolay, he has just not necessarily been what we expected. 3.31 ERA is good. He was a, I believe, like number 5 or so prospect for the Cubs coming into the year. It just feels like it hasn't materialized. He's made 2 starts. They came against the Reds and the St. Louis Cardinals. In those starts, he went 2 2/3 against the St. Louis Cardinals. He wound up giving up 2 runs and 5 walks in that one. He wound up giving up 3 runs in 3 2/3 innings while issuing 2 walks against the Cincinnati Reds. This is someone that he's got a lot of promise. He's just very raw. Meanwhile, with Lopez, he's actually been able to put it together so far this year. 4.68 ERA, not great, not awful, but you take a look at what he's been able to do over his last five starts, three runs or fewer in every one of them. So, I mean, there is a little bit of something to be had here with Lopez. The strikeouts are much better than they were last year. 21 punchouts in 25 innings. Last year, he was getting more like 5.5 to 6 per 9 innings. 12 walks and 7 home runs, still a little bit unsightly, but you take a look at the Chicago Cubs team. They are not hitting to save their lives right now. Now, they have put up 15 runs in this series, but, I mean, you take a look at it, by and large, this is a team that, in the month of September, they're in the bottom 10 of nearly every offensive category, and I can tell you why, because you've got Billy Hamilton, Anthony Rizzo, along with Chris Bryant, Kyle Schwarber, Javi Baez, Nico Horner, David Bodie, all hitting a 230 or lower for this team. I mean, Ian App and Jason Kipnis have really been the two top guys for this team. Kipnis is now hitting right around a 245, along with Cameron Maben, Victor Carantini, guys like that. But Ian App, 358 batting average, 361 on base. He's been able to give the team some home runs, so that has actually been very nice. They're looking to kick the tires on Patrick Wisdom. I could give you some wisdom here. It's not going to work out. Meanwhile, for the Chicago White Sox, they've got a bunch of guys that are doing a tremendous job of getting on base. Nick Madrigal, Adam Engel, James McCann, Eloy Jimenez, Jose Abreu, Tim Anderson, all hitting a 282 or higher for this team. Now, Luis Robert, Noah Mazzara, along with Yasmani Grandal, are all guys earning between a 220 and a 230. You could throw in there Yoan Moncada as well, but a lot of these guys, including Moncada and Grandal, have on-base percentages north of a 315. You've just gotten absolutely nothing out of Edwin Encarnacion, let's be honest. He's just been a slug for the team, but for the White Sox as well. Aaron Bummer is back in the bullpen. He wound up getting used up on Saturday, but you're still going to have someone like a Matt Foster available because he was only used for 11 pitches. You can presumably bring back Alex Colome as well. And for the Cubs, they've actually had a bullpen that has been in the top 10 with regards to ERA over the last 30 days. They wound up having to be used up quite a bit because John Lester just gave an absolutely horrid start against the Chicago Cubs on Saturday, but got to figure that guys like Colin Rhea, Dwayne Underwood Jr., guys that are able to give multiple innings are going to be ready to go for this one. I'm going to be taking this total under. I think that Azolai is going to be able to come out and he's going to be able to give a halfway decent start. And I actually like what I've seen out of Ronaldo Lopez recently. So we're going to take the Chicago White Sox in this spot along with that total under. 915, 916 on the betting board is up next. The Cleveland Indians are going to be playing us to the Pittsburgh Pirates. JT Berbaker is going to be on the bump for the Pirates. Meanwhile, it is good old to be determined for the Cleveland Indians. So this is a game that is presently off the board. As I'm seeing it right now, it looks like the Indians are going to be going with Cal Quantrill, obviously subject to change. And for Cal Quantrill, he made his last start on Tuesday, wound up going four innings, and he gave up one hit. He didn't just look good. He looked very good. Now, I will say Cal Quantrill has had some stretches, most notably with the San Diego Padres because he was part of all of that Mike Clevenger ordeal and everything like that. But he had his stretches with the San Diego Padres in which he looked very good for a few weeks, and then it just all went to mush. So this is someone that he just has never really been able to find his true watermark. But I will say this, he does a good job of not giving up a lot of hard contact. Three home runs given up in 29 innings. That was always a little bit of a hallmark with him. I figured a little bit of it was due to the fact that he was playing at Petco, but he's got 29 strikeouts in 29 innings as well. And for Berbaker, he's really been a bright spot in what has been just a bleak and terrible year for the Pittsburgh Pirates. 4.46 ERA. His last couple starts have been pretty solid. In four out of his last five, he's given up two runs or fewer. Now, he got completely exploded upon against the Chicago White Sox about 2 weeks ago, but by and large, he's been solid. He's given up two walks or fewer in each out of his last four starts. He's someone that the Pirates can build around for the future. And for the Pittsburgh Pirates, they did wind up putting eight runs up on the board in their win against the Cleveland Indians yesterday, but man, this is still a team that I believe that they have scored four runs or fewer in 15 out of their last 18 games. They are not generating a lot of offense. You just take a look at this lineup. Josh Bell, Adam Frazier, Gregory Polanco, Brian Reynolds, Jared Alvia, John Ryan Murphy, along with Jose Ozuna, Eric Gonzalez, all hitting a 232 or lower. Now, Cabrian Hayes has been magnificent. Goes 5-for-5 in the team's win on Saturday. He's now hitting a 370, 433 on base. He was highly touted coming into the year. He's lived up to it. Jacob Songs is hitting a 250, but you really don't have much outside of that. Meanwhile, for the Cleveland Indians, Jose Ramirez has really been the offense for this team. He's hitting a 287. Then you got Framil Reyes along with Cesar Hernandez hitting between a 274 and a 284. Francisco Lindor obviously is going to get his 265 with a 341 on base. But then you've got a bunch of guys that they just need to pick it up because you've got Jordan Luplo, Oscar Mercado, Sandy Leon, Austin Hedges, along with Roberto Perez, shall I go on, of the guys that are hitting below .200 for this team, because you've got also Carlos Santana hitting .187, though I will say he's towards the top of the league when it comes to walks, .339 when it comes to walks, but he just has not been able to hit home runs the way that he did last year. Josh Naylor, ever since coming over from the San Diego Padres, has not been able to do a lot either. Delino DeShields Jr. doing a little bit of something, and we do know this with the Cleveland Indians. Brandon is right now leading the league in saves. You've got Tristan McKenzie now coming out of the bullpen as a little bit of a specialist. He wound up getting used up on Saturday, so you've got guys like James Karinchak, Oliver Perez and company. They're going to be able to come into the game, so I'm probably going to be taking a look at this total under. If it's north of, I would say, 8, even at 8, I'd probably be taking a look at the under. I mean, that's just the way that Cleveland Indian games have been trending in general, but I'm going to be very curious to see this line, because if the Pirates are catching like plus 140 again, they've already sewn up the number one pick because they've been that bad this year, so they've got nothing to lose by winning. So I might be taking a look at the Pirates if it's a big plus price. If it's more respectable, like Cleveland Indians minus 130 or something, probably would be taking a look at that. But check back in the morning on my Twitter feed at JarenSquirty1 for set plays there. 917, 918 on the betting board is up next. Boston Red Sox are going to be in the road face off against the Atlanta Braves. Bryce Wilson goes for the Bravos. Meanwhile, Nick Pavetta is on the bump for the Boston Red Sox. If you're looking at the Sox, going to be getting anywhere between plus 115 and plus 122. Meanwhile, if you're taking a look at the Bravos, they started out as minus 150 favorites. Now, as I'm seeing it, anywhere between minus 128 and minus 135. Total on this game is 10. Over and under, anywhere between minus 105 and minus 115. With the Atlanta Braves, this is a team that might have found a little bit of something out of Bryce Wilson. I don't know if it was just maybe the team hadn't seen a lot of tape on him or anything like that, but he wound up making a little bit of a spot start against the Miami Marlins a few days ago because Cole Hamels is pretty much out for the year. Five scoreless innings with seven strikeouts against the Fish. He looked very good. Now, for his career, Bryce Wilson doesn't necessarily have great numbers. He actually had a 1-1 record in 2019. He made four starts, six total appearances, 720 ERA. Year before that, 643 ERA. Now, granted, that was seven innings, but still, this is a guy that maybe is putting it together. He has been able to get quite a few strikeouts, 13 punchouts, and 12 and two-thirds innings. And for Nick Pavetta, his first start with the Boston Red Sox wasn't terrible. He gave up one run over the course of five innings. He had been working on about a 15 ERA prior to that. It still had a 9.28. And if you know Nick Pavetta from his time with Philadelphia Phillies, hard to have any faith in him whatsoever, and that's putting it politely. Now, the Atlanta Braves might be resting a couple guys, but I have to believe that they're still going to have quite a few of their hitters out there. As you take a look at the lineup that they sent to the plate on Saturday, they saw out there Freddie Freeman, Marcel Ozuna, Travis Arnaud. All these guys are hitting a .321 or higher. Ronald Acuna Jr. hitting a .250 but a .406 on base. Adam Duvall has been able to give this team 16 home runs. He's hitting right around a .240. You've got guys like Austin Riley sitting in that realm as well. Now, Ender Inciarte has been useless, hitting a .195, but Adani Echeverria is hitting a .260. Dansby Swanson more in the neighborhood of a .280. So you got a great lineup there. And for the Boston Red Sox, got to figure that they're going to trot out there. They're studs still. And you've got quite a few guys who are doing a great job of getting on bases. You've got Bobby Dalbec, Jackie Bradley Jr., Christian Vasquez, along with Rafael Devers, all hitting for this team between a .283 and a .265. Xander Bogaerts hitting a .295. Alex Verdugo, .367 on base, .308 batting average. So they have been able to do a tremendous job for this team. Now, you've got JD Martinez along with Michael Chavis and Taewin Zhu. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I'm saying that without looking at his name, and I'm sure that I butchered it, but all three of these guys in a .215 or lower. Christian Arroyo has been able to give this team a little bit of something as well. And with the Boston Red Sox, got to figure that they're going to be experimenting with some bullpen pieces, and we've seen the guys that they actually think are okay bullpen pieces just absolutely poop the bed. I think that this is going to be batting practice for the Atlanta Braves. I think that they're going to tee off on Nick Pavetta. They're going to tee off on a very bad bullpen. So for that reason, I'm going to be taking a look at the Atlanta Braves. Whether that be money line or run line is a question. If I'm seeing like a plus 130 run line on the Atlanta Braves, I'm certainly going to be taking that, and I'm going to be taking this total over as well. We move on to 919, 920 on the betting board. You've got yourself the Cincinnati Reds hitting the road to face off against the Minnesota Twins. Rich Hill is going to be going for the Twinkies. Meanwhile, you've got Sonny Gray on the bump for the Cincinnati Reds. With the Cincinnati Reds and Minnesota Twins game, this is one that is presently off the board, so we've got a whole lot of nothing when it comes to that, but you know that with the Cincinnati Reds, they actually have to win in order to avoid maybe some shenanigans as well. They are sitting there at 30-29. If they lose and the Milwaukee Brewers win, they're both at 30-30, so buckle up for safety. when you take a look at Sonny Gray, it has been an up and down season for him. 5-3 record, 3.73 ERA. He wound up having a start skip for him, and then he came back against the Milwaukee Brewers. The team lost the game, but he looked very good. He went 5 innings and he gave up 1 run. Now, he did give up a home run there, but that's the only home run that he's given up in each out of his last 5 starts. I will say this for him, though. In his previous 2 starts, he gave up 11 runs in 4 innings. So, I mean, there is that. And then you take a look at Rich Hill. He's the oldest active starting pitcher in the big leagues at 40 years old. 2-2 record, 3.27 ERA, and he's been able to do a solid job of keeping the ball in the yard. 3 home runs given up in 33 innings. His bugaboo while he was with LA is the fact that he would give up quite a few home runs, but he would get punch outs. A little bit of a different guy now. 27 strikeouts over the course of 33 innings, but you take a look at Rich Hill. He has went in his last 5 starts, given up 2 runs or fewer in every one of them. He's went at least 5 innings in 4 of those starts as well. So he has been tremendous for the Minnesota Twins. Now, I will say this. What's not tremendous for the Minnesota Twins, it seems like the bullpen has been starting to backfire on them a little bit. You got to figure that a guy like Lewis Thorpe is going to be available, but they wound up having to use up Cody Sashek, Tyler Rogers, and Ty Duffy in that game on Saturday, which they were able to get the victory in. And for the Minnesota Twins, this is a team that they're just not doing a great job of being able to get on base. Ahir Adrianza, Marwin Gonzalez, Jake Cave, Max Kepler, all guys hitting a 235 or lower, but Byron Buxton has given the team like 14 home runs. He's hitting in the neighborhood of about a 250 to a 260, along with Eddie Rosario and Jorge Polanco. Luis Arias is back. He's hitting at 315. Nelson Cruz hitting above a 400 on base. So it seems like they are getting healthy at the right time. And for the Cincinnati Reds, I did mention it with our good buddy Scott Seidenberg. You just don't have a lot of guys that are getting on base. Shogo Akiyama, Jesse Winker, along with Kyle Farmer. These guys are in between a 248 and a 258. Then from there, Mike Moustakas is hitting at 231, and everyone else that received an at-bat on Saturday, hitting a 229 or lower. I mean, it's just one of these things where it's like, you gotta be kidding me. Joey Votto has a 350 on base, but he's hitting at 228. Eugenio Suarez has a double-digit amount of home runs, but he's hitting a .197. Jose Garcia has been as useless as a poopy-flavored lollipop. Kirk Cassali is hitting at 220. Whenever you get out there, someone like an Aristides Aquino, he just keeps swinging at the same pitch. He's hitting a .182. It's just hard to be bullish on this team. They are going to have guys like Raciel Iglesias, Amir Garrett, and company that are going to be available at the bullpen. And I do like Lucas Sims as well. So there is that. But you take a look at the Cincinnati Reds team. I just have a tough time thinking that even though they have everything in the world to play for, that they're going to be able to necessarily do a great job. If you're seeing a total as north of 8 in this spot, I'm going to be taking it under. And I'm probably going to be taking a look at the Minnesota Twins as long as they are not like a ridiculous like minus 145 or greater favorite. So we're going to be riding with that. 921, 922 on the betting board. Up next, the Oakland A's are going to be playing us to the Seattle Mariners. Marco Gonzalez is going to be on the bump for the Mariners. Meanwhile, Frankie Montas goes for the Oakland A's. Your total on this game is 8.5. With the 8.5 overs anywhere between even and minus 110. The unders anywhere between minus 110 and minus 115. If you're taking a look at the Seattle Mariners, getting anywhere between plus 105 and plus 125. So you got quite a range there. Meanwhile, if you're taking a look at the Oakland A's, you're going to be laying anywhere between minus 120 and minus 135. And this is a spot in which I just can't trust in Frankie Montas once again. Ever since he wound up having his start moved about a month, maybe a little bit more, because he was dealing with a back injury, he has been downright terrible. He has given up 4 runs or more in 5 out of his last 6 starts. I mean, this is someone that he hasn't went north of 5 1/3 innings in like 2 months. It's been absolutely terrible to watch. He has given up over the course of his last 5 starts a grand total of 8 home runs. The walks are starting to come down, but I mean, he's now sitting here with a 6.32 ERA. Maybe the PEDs did help him out a little bit because, man, he is not doing a good job. Meanwhile, it's Marco Gonzalez. He has been masterful this year. Might be the most underrated player out there in the American League, in my opinion. 7-2 record, 3.06 ERA. He's on pace for one of the greatest strikeout to walk rates in the history of baseball. 59 punchouts and 6 walks. I mean, he's given up 8 home runs and 6 walks right now. I mean, that's how crazy it's been. And with Marco Gonzalez, he has given up 3 runs or fewer in 4 out of his last 5 starts. Each of the last 5 starts that he's taken the mound, the Seattle Mariners have won. And the Seattle Mariners took both games from the Oakland A's on Saturday. You can tell that this is an Oakland team that they're not caring a whole lot because they have locked themselves into a playoff spot. Meanwhile, this is a Seattle Mariners team that they're building for 2021 and beyond. And with the Seattle Mariners, you got to love the fact that the top lineup has been very good for the team, as you've got J.P. Crawford, Kyle Seager, Ty France, and Kyle Lewis, all with an on-base percentage of a 233 or higher. For Seager and J.P. Crawford, they're hitting in the neighborhood of a 250. Lewis more around a 275. Jorge Mamolois is only hitting at 212 for the team, but Tim Lopez has been able to hit right around a 250. I mean, heck, in game game two of that double dip, Joseph Odom was giving this team a little bit of something. I mean, things are starting to go right for them, but for the Oakland A's, this is a team that they just don't do a good job of putting the ball in play. Tony Kemp, Robbie Grossman, along with Mark Canna, Sean Murphy, all in between a 230 and a 242. Tommy LaSalle has been able to hit a 273, but Matt Olson, along with Jake Lamb, you've not been able to get anything whatsoever out of Ramon Laureano. Vimel Machin, Chris with a K, Davis, all these guys are hitting a 225 or lower. They just don't hit for average. I mean, they do have a very good bullpen, but Liam Hendricks wound up getting used up in that doubleheader. DJ McFarland did as well. They wound up having to go to 25-plus pitches out of Jordan Weems. You wound up having Lou Trevino enter into game one of that doubleheader. This is an Oakland team that's a little bit gassed with the bullpen. I don't know what Frankie Montas is going to be able to give them. Meanwhile, I think Marco Gonzalez is going to go out there, and he's going to turn another tremendous start. So we are going to be going with the total under, and I'm going to be riding with the Seattle Mariners once again. 923, 924 on the betting board is up next. The LA Angels are going to be hitting the road to face off against the LA Dodgers in the battle for LA, as you've got Griffin Kenning, who is going to be going for the Angels. Meanwhile, it is still to be determined for the Dodgers, which means that this game is presently off the board with the LA Angels. This is a bunch that they've been able to get a lot more offense recently. I do give them a lot of credit with that. Now they wound up sending out Julio Teheran to get a start on Saturday, and for Julio Teheran, he did not help out his bullpen whatsoever, going one inning and giving up three runs. Congratulations on an absolutely just atrocious start. But when you take a look at the Angels offense, you got Jared Walsh, David Fletcher, along with Tyler Ward, and Jemiah Jones all hitting above a 280 for this team. Now, it looks like Mike Trout is pretty much done for the year. He did not wind up playing yesterday. They've still got Shohei Ohtani out there in the fold. And for Shohei Ohtani, well, show me something, my man, because you're hitting below the Mendoza line. Joe Adele has been setting fire to the rain of his batting average at a buck 67. But Max Sassy is back, and I actually like what Max Sassy has been able to provide. 281 batting average. He's been able to do a solid job. But Jared Walsh, he's been one of the more underrated power hitters out there in the American League the last few weeks, ever since he's gotten some at-bats. But then you take a look at the LA Dodgers. This is a team that, even though they don't have a lot to play for and they're playing the backups are guys like Gavin Lux, who, according to MLB Pipeline, was a top five prospect coming into the year. Edwin Rios is hitting a 253. Will Smith was thought of as a prospect. He's hitting above a 290. He's got an on-base percentage north of a 400. If you wind up subbing him out for Austin Barnes, he's been able to hit right around a 260-ish. Now, I will say Jock Peterson, along with Mr. Lux, Max Muncy, all these guys hitting below a 200. But how about Justin Turner down for what? Mookie Betts and Corey Seager, all hitting between a 292 and a 311, all with an on-base percentage north of a 360. Kike Hernandez has not necessarily done a lot for this team, but you just take a look at Cody Bellinger starting to heat up, and that is doomsday for everyone else out there in the league. The LA Angels burned through so much of their bullpen. I mean, they might need to trust in Matt Andreese to give this team some long relief, but for Griffin Canning, he's been okay for this team. He's been able to give the team right around a 4-5-ish ERA. The swing and miss stuff has not been terrific, and he's been giving up a lot of hard contact, so that's going to be interesting. For the Dodgers, I fully expect this to be a bullpen game. Maybe you give Alex Wood a start, since he's a former starter. He wound up being able to get one of those spot starts a few days ago, so it's going to be interesting to see what is decided there by the LA Dodgers. Obviously, I don't have much for you on this game, but if it is maybe like Alex Wood going up against Griffin Canning, might be a sneaky spot for the under, because I'm seeing one number out there at Bookmaker. This is a total of 9 with the over at minus 120, the under at even, with the Dodgers right around a minus 175-ish favorite, the Angels more on a plus 155-ish underdog. In this spot, I probably would take a look at the Angels if you are indeed getting Canning versus Alex Wood. Check back in the morning with my Twitter feed at JRSQuarty1, but certainly an interesting spot. We need to see what the Dodgers are all going to be trotting out there for sure. 925, 926 on the betting board is up next. The Arizona Diamondbacks are going to be playing against the Colorado Rockies. Kyle Freeland goes for the Rockies. Meanwhile, Madison Bumgarner on the bump for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Total on this game is 9. The over is anywhere between minus 110 and minus 115, and the under is anywhere between minus 105 and minus 110. And this is a relatively pick'em game right now. With the Arizona Diamondbacks, you're going to be finding them anywhere between minus 105, and I'm seeing as high as a minus 111. Meanwhile, with the Colorado Rockies, you're going to be finding them anywhere between a minus 104 and a minus 110. So really, it's a pick'em game at this point, and I've got to be riding with the Colorado Rockies. Madison Bumgarner looked better in his last start, but that was against the Houston Astros, who have been making everyone look good. Prior to that, he had an ERA that was north of an 8. Now it's a 7.36. He's given up 13 home runs in 36 and 2/3 innings. That's nearly 3 home runs per 9 innings. He has only gotten 26 strikeouts. He's a shell of himself. 0-4 record. I have absolutely no faith in him whatsoever. Meanwhile, Kyle Freeland, been a little bit of a resurgent season. Now, he has regressed a little bit recently, giving up 4 runs in 2 out of his last 4 starts, but in his last 4 starts, he has gotten at least 6-plus innings in the books as well, and he's only given up 2 home runs in those last 4 starts as well. Walks are starting to creep up. He's given up at least 2 of them in each out of his last 4, and he certainly is not much of a swing of this guy. 44 punch-outs in 68 and a third innings, but he's looked pretty darn respectable for the Colorado Rockies. Whenever they've been on the road, the bullpen has been decent. I wouldn't say that it's necessarily great, but you've had guys like Ajario Diaz, who wound up coming into the game for 12 pitches on Saturday, who have looked pretty good. Daniel Bard has been able to give the team a little bit of something. Cesar Estevez has really been pooping the bed recently, but by and large, you've got a pretty decent bullpen. And for the Colorado Rockies, they were able to come out with some vengeance on Saturday, and they really took it to the Arizona Diamondbacks, and you still got quite a few guys that do a good job of getting on base. Josh Fuentes, Trevor Story, Charlie Blackman, Kevin Pillar, Remy El Tapia, all in a 288 or higher. Now, the chasm at the bottom of the lineup is pretty big, as then you've got Daniel Murphy, Garrett Hampson, along with Matt Kemp, hitting in the neighborhood of a 230 and a 240. Ryan McMahon, Sam Hilliard, they're hitting a 220 or lower. But then you take a look at the Arizona Diamondbacks. You got a couple guys that are starting to hit for this team. Ketel Marte, famously of the Marte Parte, Christian Walker, David Peralta, Pavin Smith, all hitting a 270 or higher for this team. Cole Calhoun's hitting a 222, but a 336 on base, double-digit amount of home runs. But then Josh Van Meter, John Jay, Dalton Varsho, Carson Kelly, Eduardo Escobar. List goes on and on. They've got a lot of guys that are hitting a 215 or lower. It's been just absolutely anemic for this team. With the Arizona Diamondbacks, they wind up having to trot out there a couple trustworthy bullpen pieces. You wind up having to go to Mr. Tyler Widener for an inning. Now, they are going to have available Stefan Kikturin, who's been able to do a solid job for this team, but I take a look at this spot. I think the Colorado Rockies should be able to take it to Madison Bumgarner. It's just been a historically bad year for Mad Bum. I hope that he winds up finding it next season, or else he's going to find himself out of the league. I mean, it's been that bad, but I'm going to be taking a look at the Rockies here, and I'm going to be taking a look at this total over. I just think that the Rockies have batting practice on Mad Bum. 927, 928 on the betting board is up next. Philadelphia Phillies sit the road to face off against the Tampa Bay Hot Shell Rays. Aaron Supernola is going to be going for the now eliminated from the postseason Philadelphia Phillies. Actually, it does look like because the Giants lost, they might actually have a heartbeat. I don't know how. I don't know why. But for the Philadelphia Phillies, it's going to be Aaron Supernola. Meanwhile, for the Tampa Bay Rays, it is good old to be determined. Now, you got to figure that Aaron Nola is going to try to do everything humanly possible for the Philadelphia Phillies. I do think that they're eliminated because they've got 31 losses. So I can't think that there's any hope of them getting into the postseason. But got to think that Aaron Nola has pride here. 90 punch-outs in 67 and 2/3 innings. 5-4 record, 306 ERA. He just hasn't necessarily had a lot of help around him. I mean, in his last start, he went 6 innings. He gave up 5 runs, but 3 of which were earned. I mean, he's been the victim of giving up 5 earned runs in his last 4 starts. So, I mean, that's one of those things where he just has to look at his teammates and say, thanks for nothing, guys. But he has gotten at least 6 punch-outs in each out of his last 6 starts. He certainly has done his part for the Tampa Bay Rays. As I'm seeing it right now, it's going to be Josh Fleming. Typically, they've had an opener come in from, and in his last 2 bulk appearances, Josh Fleming has went 3 and 2/3 innings respectively, and he's given up 1 run in the process. So it's been something that has really worked for the Tampa Bay Rays. Obviously, the Rays bullpen has been absolutely masterful all year long. I mean, you just have so many guys like a Diego Castillo. Now you've got Oliver Drake back in the fold, Peter Fairbanks, list goes on and on. They've all been just terrific for this team. And then you take a look at the Tampa Bay Rays. Functional offense, nothing great, nothing awful. Brandon Lau, Willy Adames, Manuel Margot, all guys hitting between a 259 and a 274. Mark Brusso, along with Randy Arozarena, though, these guys are hitting between a 290 and a 295. Now, you need a little bit more out of guys like Michael Perez, Mike Zunino, Brett Phillips, Kevin Kiermaier, Yoshi Setsugo. They're all hitting a 220 or lower, but you certainly have enough guys that are able to put the ball in play, and they're able to give you some offense. Meanwhile, for the Philadelphia Phillies, got to figure that they might be resting a couple guys here because it looks like they are done for the postseason. Alec Baum has been able to be the bomb. 340 batting average, 403 on base. Bryce Harper, 418 on base. JT Realmuto, 265 batting average. If you wind up subbing him in for Austin Knapp. Austin Knapp has been able to hit a 300, so he's been solid. Andrew McCutchen's up to a 260 with his batting average. Gene Segura is hitting a 271. Didi Gregorius a 285. Got to figure that you're going to once again have Rhys Hoskins out of the fold, but this is a team that they certainly do have some good offense. It's just going to be interesting to find out where the total is, because if it's at 8 or higher, I'm going to be taking a look at the under. And if you're able to get a good price here on the Phillies and what you're getting plus money, I do think that pride is going to set in. I do think that they're going to be able to get the win, but this is a Tampa Bay Rays team that they're not going to roll over. They're just that scrappy team that you know that with them being at 39 and 20, they're going to want to get to 40. So check back in the morning on my Twitter feed at @JarrettSquirty1 once we all know what the situation is with the Rays and we get a line. And we wrap things up with 929, 930 on the betting board. The St. Louis Cardinals are going to be playing us to the Milwaukee Brewers. Brett Anderson goes for the Brewers. Austin Gomber is on the bump for the St. Louis Cardinals. This is one that's presently off the board, and I echo the sentiments of the conversation we had with Scott Seidenberg. 8 or higher, and this is an under for me. Austin Gomber wound up really not pitching at all at the big league level during the 2019 season, but in 2018 he was pretty solid. He's made 3 starts here in 2020. Two of which were 3 innings or fewer, but his last start against the Kansas City Royals, 6 scoreless innings, and in the other 2 starts, he did have to evade a lot of danger in 3 innings against the Detroit Tigers, but all scoreless as well. This is someone that you can trust in. He has given up 1 home run in 25 innings. The 13 walks are a little bit unsightly, but he's been able to do a solid job of being able to get some swings and misses as well. Then you take a look at Brett Anderson. He hasn't given up more than 4 runs in any start so far this year. And you take a look at what he's done recently. 2 runs or fewer in 3 out of his last 5. He's not a swing and miss guy. He's given you 31 punch outs in 45 innings, but he's not going to let you down either. 9 walks and 6 home runs given up in those 45 innings. So he's been pretty rock solid. Last time he wound up facing off against the St. Louis Cardinals, team gave him 18 runs of support. I can't think that the team is going to give him 18 runs of support here, but with the Milwaukee Brewers, this is a team that they do have the potential of a big fly because you had Christian Yelich in that double dip a few days ago, being able to give the team a home run. But I will say this, Daniel Vogelbach, Keston Hira, Eric Sogard, Omir Narváez, Jacob Nottingham, all hitting a 220 or lower, but Daniel Vogelbach's numbers are a little bit deceiving. He was hitting right around 100 with the Seattle Mariners. With the Brewers, he's hitting more north of a 300, so that is something that you're able to take a look at. Jed Gurko, along with Luis Arraez, Avisail Garcia, and Ryan Braun. You could throw in there Tyron Taylor as well. Only between a 238 and a 250, and with Ryan Braun, this actually might be his last season, so you gotta figure that he's gonna be coming out with some fire. This is a Milwaukee Brewers team that has everything in the world to play for. This is a St. Louis Cardinals team with everything in the world to play for. Brad Miller, right around a 360 on base. Colton Wong is a similar one as Colton Wong, Tommy Edmund, along with Yadier Molina. Only between a 255 and a 268. Your one fear with the St. Louis Cardinals is that this team might be running out of steam, but Giovanni Gallegos, John Gant did not wind up pitching on Saturday, so they are going to be available out there in the bullpen. Dylan Carlson, along with Matt Carpenter, Matt Wieters, quite a few others, Lane Thomas, they've been hitting a 215 or lower, so that's a little bit of a horse piece situation. You do like the fact that Paul DeJong has come back and he's available at a 250. Power just has not been there, though. He had 30-plus home runs for the team during the 2019 season, just 3 so far this year, and Paul Goldschmidt, 412 on base, 295 batting average, but you expect more than 6 home runs and 20 RBI out of him as well. So I do give the edge here to the Milwaukee Brewers, especially if you're getting a plus price here. Check back in the morning on my Twitter feed at @JarrettSquirty1. But any total that is 8 or higher, going to be taking a look at that under. Certainly going to be taking a look at the Brewers if it is a plus price as well. And that will wrap things up for the Baseball Betting Podcast on this Sunday, the last regular season day before we get into the postseason. That is, unless if we wind up having some random Monday games, and in that case, it'll be very fascinating. But regardless, a big thanks to Scott Seidenberg for joining me in the last segment. Great handicapper, great podcaster. And if you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If there's ever a question you'd like answered on this podcast, either fire that into my Twitter timeline at @JarrettSquirty1 or send in an Apple Podcast review. If you rate 5 stars, you help spread the word about the Baseball Betting Podcast. Myself, Greg Peterson, you actually helped me out quite a bit, so I always appreciate that. And you can send in your questions, comments, concerns, beefs, what have you there. Hope you're all safe, healthy, and doing well. I'll talk to you guys once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.